here or over there, one or the other.
Presently style. So we have to call this a contemporary church. It's
obviously is not Romanesque, it's not medieval, it's not Renaissance. It's the cathedral downtown would be a modified Renaissance church. I think if you were a bird or an airplane, and you look down on top of this church, you would have a great problem. You don't know what that building is. You can tell what the Exposition Garden building is. It's a big rectangle with a rounded roof. But if you look down on this church, you would say, my goodness, what a strange-looking design, strange-looking outline for this building. All right, the reason and the manner of the building of this church was that it tried to accommodate the space to the action that was going to take place within it. I'll give you an example of how it progressed. We talked to the architect. We said, now we have to have a building that's going to seat about 700 or 800 people, or 1,000, to start off with 1,000. It has to have a very sanctuary for the liturgical ceremonies that take place. Use those two terms coincidentally, environment and environment. But anyway, that's what it is. We have to have a sacristy place where the priests get vested. Then we have another little room called money count, or whatever it is. And immediately we need two or three more of those. Not that we have more money to count, but we need more places to stack things.
Money count.
I think when you build your houses, and you look back at them, you say we should have put in more closets. We should have put in more space for storing things. Because we Americans are hoarders of things. We keep things. And we keep pushing back into these places. So you need more places to store them. Then we have that front room out there, which we call community room, or meeting room or something. And that was a fortunate accident in the building process. When we were building the church, we talked to the architect and said, now let's not build a great big church and then make the front row be a funnel where all the people will get squashed into a little funnel when they go outside and get their cars around. Right, so we've got to have a big lobby or a big vestibule, whatever you want to call it. So we had the two areas of entry and exit designated, the doorways. And then, as time went on, the architect had them draw much bigger than they are. And then he said to us one day, he said, how many pews or seats are you willing to give up to have a nice lobby? Well, I mean, you have to give up. And I think he said something like 100 or 150. So originally this church, we were talking about maybe 1,000 people or 950. We got all the way back down to 800 now. And what happened is we built that wall back there, that wooden wall back there, and brought it in from the outside windows. The outside window was the original back wall. And we brought that wall in, put it there, and then connected the two lobbies, the two vestibules, into one room that went across it. So to say it wasn't planned originally, it just happened by accident, but I think it's been a very fortunate accident because that room was used for many things back there, wedding receptions, and funeral wake services, and parties for new people, and all kinds of other things. So it's one of those things that you stumble on as you're moving along. And I think the important thing about this church, we started building this church, it was dedicated in 77. We started building it, planning it in about 75, when you people got tired of kneeling on the concrete floors in the gymnasium, and said we've got to build a church. So I had started preparing to build a church about 1962, when I first came out here, or even previous to that, because I am not a very quick thinker, and so I have to store up things for a long time in my mind before they become concrete, which is my mind. So I have all kinds of drawings and plans and pictures and designs and things and churches up to that point. So then we got to this point and we said to the architect,
have now.
The big piece of paper is in the middle. The other piece of paper is back here. Of course, the clara over there. And the other room. Then, got them all into the correct position and then wrap the wall around. So that's how the wall, that's where it is. The wall moves out that way because the clara is over there. It jumps back this way because there's nothing there. And it goes out there. So that's why, if you're a bird and you look down, you say, my little funny, strange, looking place. But it is. You build a church according to the action that's going to take place within it. You don't build a church, you don't build church walls and put them up and then say, okay, now let's see if we can fit into there all the things we have to do. So actually what determined the design of this church was the activities that take place that are taking place within it. That's kind of the history of the background of the church. The style then is dictated by the functions of the liturgy that take place in here, and then by the other qualities of disabilities. So you can see where the person's up at the altar, and the audibilities, we can hear, and so all of those things came into play. And an architect is a person who has to take all these things into consideration and then apply to them the faithful, correct use of materials, bricks, stone, mortar, whatever can be built out of steel, and then out of that good use, correct use of materials, and the truthful use of it comes the beautiful effect of it. I'm thinking on St. Thomas, who said the marriage of goodness and truth brings the child to beauty. Thomas Aquinas, 1400 or something. I'll show you that right away. But anyway, Thomas Aquinas said goodness and truth produce beauty. So why is this church attractive and, if you would, beauty? Because it has been very faithful. The people building have been very faithful to good use of materials and the truthful use of materials. Now, what do I mean by truthful use of materials? Everything in this church, whether it be bricks or cedar wood or steel, that's under those beams up there, or the columns here, or the marble, not marble, stone in the altars, all of them have, they are just what they are. They're not pretending to be something else. What do I mean by that? Let's say a lot of places will take a column that's made out of a steel bead, a column in the middle of it, they wrap plaster around it, and somebody comes along and paints it very nicely. It pretends to be marble. And it's not marble. If a column is steel or stone or wood, let it do that. It won't pretend to be something else. That's why I say there's a certain goodness and truth about this building, because all the materials in here have been used authentically and truthfully. They are what they are. When we were first talking about the altar, the sanctuary parts here, the altar and the altar, some of the people said, let's get some imported marble from Italy or some other place. And I said, well, why can't we get something that's made in the United States? Why can't we get something that's local, if you will? So we got that stone, which is an Antedo stone and an Antedo foot. It's not pretending to be marble, it's stone. It's just a plain old, good old stone from Antedo. And I think it was really marble. All the wood out there is oak. That's finally oak wood. All the wood in the ceiling is cedar. And it's 3-inch common blue cedar, and it took an awful long time to put it up there. But it has not only a rather simple beauty, but it has a very good acoustical quality, because we put it in backwards. Not that we didn't know what we were doing, but we put it in backwards because the rough side of the cedar is here. The other side of that ceiling is all nice smooth wood, like you might put in your home. But the rough side of the cedar is the side that has just enough, the acoustical people call it tooth. Tooth means it's a rough surface. It has just enough tooth on it to accept the sound, butter the sound, and send it back again. So
but it's not. If you think this ceiling was covered with acoustical tile, that acoustical tile will soak up the sound. It has a tendency to kill sound. If you want to kill sound, you want it to embellish sound by letting it go out and come back and be better, as they say. Okay. All right. The basic design of this church, while being dictated by the function of the liturgy that's been going inside of it, is all related to theology. Now, first of all, the very structure of the building, the inside of the ceiling here, you have to imagine to be the wings of a bird. The wings of a bird, from Scripture, says that the Lord will shelter his little ones like the mother hen shelters her chicks. All right, so these are supposed to be the sheltering wings of God over all. So this is the inside, like you look up on the inside of the wings of a bird. The other theology of it is that there are two main tongues, and man. And the, this was all in the old I've got one copy left. This column on this side represents the incarnation. The column on that side, I found in the fifth year, represents the Trinity. So our religion is based upon two basic truths, Trinity and the incarnation. And you know what those are. And they are related by presence of Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. Second person of the Blessed Trinity, the person of the Incarnation. So between the two columns there is the presence of Jesus, who comes out to us from over the altar. He comes out to us in the congregation with love and with all that he gives to us. And we return to him. We go around this way and around that way. We return to him by giving him our praise. So that whole section on that side is supposed to be the praise section of the church. In the center window, you have King David, who wrote all the Psalms. In the west window there, you have the 150th Psalm, which that was the psalm about the faith. It's the final psalm about the brethren. The final psalm said, that with trumpets and sounding horns, sing with joy in the presence of the Lord. So the trumpets and sounding horns. And you have the censer, which is a symbol of prayer going up to God. In the first window here, you would have the stars and the planets and all those things spinning around. And that's in the 19th Psalm, which says, the heavens declare the glory of God. 18th Psalm, excuse me. The heavens declare the glory of God. So all of this is declaring the glory of God by trumpets and sound and all the things. So that's the whole praise section. So it's a very appropriate